Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Christmas Eve, and then you got Christmas Day. I hope everybody's caught up to their Christmas shopping, and I hope everybody's doing great, man. We've had a great month of boxing. It ended with Bernard Hopkins and Sean Pascal in a draw. A lot of people are having some mixed feelings about this. A lot of folks believe that Bernard Hopkins edged it out. You know, he should have deserved the win. I know a lot of fight fans are real passionate about, you know, their fights and really passionate about their fighters and calling this a highway robbery. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if that's going to be the right term to call something a highway robbery. Gabriel, what do you think?
It was a very close fight. You know, I scored it twice. The first one, I scored a draw. Second time around, I scored it for Hopkins. You know, the second time around, you know, sometimes you're kind of influenced by the things that people have said, you know, and you're kind of looking for specific things rather than getting that first kind of impression. But to me, you know, I was surprised because, you know, the way I think I've explained this before, the way I score fights, I'm usually, you know, on deadline. This one I wasn't. But I'll take notes throughout the card, and I won't look at what the previous round score is, try to forget it, and just look at each round fresh. And so in my mind, I thought Hopkins had won when I added up my tally. It was an even fight. But then when I went back, you know, there was a few things that I had changed. For one, I didn't think that the knockdown should be automatic 10-8s. You know, most people think, oh, you know, if you lose or, you know, if you get knocked down, then it automatically is a 10-8. And that's not true. You lose a point for losing the round. You lose a point for the knockdown. Now, if it's a close round, as both those rounds were, and really Hopkins seemed to me in control and on his way to winning them, with the knockdown, you don't lose 2 points. You know, it swings and you lose a point. Now, somebody has to win a 10-point must system. So Pascal gets a 10, he gets a 9, and the score becomes much closer. I don't think it was a robbery. I mean, you think Santa Cruz versus Casamayor or Chavez versus Pernell Whitaker, those are robberies. This was just a very, very close fight. You know, if it had happened in America, you know, Bernard probably would have gotten the nod for sure. But that's all, you know, I don't even know if that's so much regional as maybe they picked judges that they felt would be, you know, favorable to Pascal's style versus Hopkins' style. That's generally how things go. It's not really about region, you know.
Here's the thought of region here is that if it was judges favoring a particular fighter, obviously they were going to favor the home fighter, Pascal, and giving him a large margin of taking the fight. Instead, it was given a draw, you know, where you see that. This was a really tough fight to score. I mean, you know, the old timer comes out and you see it took him a while. It took him halfway through the rounds to kind of get his legs underneath him. I don't know about you, Gabriel, but it just seemed like his legs were not there completely. It looked like he needed to get some blood circulation. He just, you know, with the tap of the back of the head, didn't seem like a very hard hit, made him fall forward. I for the first time, I saw Bernard really kind of squaring up in some moments in the fight. You know, it just kind of seemed like he was a little thrown off, not by what Pascal was doing, but basically of him trying to find his rhythm.
Yeah, I think it did take him a little bit of time to gauge the speed. You know, Pascal's not a real traditional type of fighter. You know, he's kind of one of these guys that's more athlete than pure boxer. He's going to move around a lot. He's going to use his speed and agility and leap in with flurries and then get out of there. He's not, you know, like whereas Bernard was kind of like a metronome. You know, he was just calibrating the whole time, but trying to keep the time, you know, using his jab, getting to the body, kind of, you know, tortoise in the hare. You know, he was very slow and steady as opposed to Pascal, who was kind of all front runner. You know, he was great early on, but as that body work started to sink in, it was his legs that started to look really bad later on. You know, he was the one that was getting hurt to the body and having a lot of trouble. I think a lot of it, too, is that Pascal didn't fight. He fought very – he wasted a lot of energy, you know. There's a lot of wasted energy, moving around, constantly moving. And when you look at Bernard, there's little shifts in his feet. There's little half steps, little feints. He kind of position, reposition. But it's all very economical, the way he does it. It doesn't waste – you know, his upper body isn't moving that much. He's just, you know, economical in his approach.
Whereas right.
Pascal, you know, you add in all that movement and the body work, and of course he was going to tire. You know, it's just, I don't think it's just
it's the youth and the nerve, you know, being a little nervous. I mean, Bernard Hopkins is a veteran of this sport. The guy has been around in the sport for quite some time that he just knows exactly how to maintain a pace and not really exude any type of energy, you know what I mean? Making sure he maintains himself, he keeps himself at a steady pace. And really, Gabe, it's fascinating to see this guy being able to dictate a younger guy into doing things that, you know, Chad Dawson couldn't kind of bait him in to do, you know? It's fascinating to see that, you know, that Bernard Hopkins still has that, you know, and he's, you know, he's that wine that just finally just keeps getting finer and finer as the years go by, you know, where the Bernard Hopkins of the old was a mauler, a guy that kind of liked to get in the mix, you know, and chop you down, where now you just see a very subtle kind of a silent type of assassin, a guy that doesn't look for the kill, but he looks to kind of just chop you down and leave you with no legs, you know, and walk away, you know.
He has a way of making himself look like he's winning the whole time, even if he's standing there not doing anything. Hopkins looks like he's in control, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a big perception is you know that people have is they look at the fight and they go, well, Bernard never looked like he was losing except when he got dropped. Other than that, you had Pascal avoiding him the whole fight, running. He fought like the challenger, and Hopkins looked like the champ.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Just flat out.
You had the old timer take it to the young lion. That's what was. It looked like the gate. It looked like the zookeeper, you know, trying to get the lion, you know, on a net and put him back into the cage. That's exactly what it looked like in the fight. And surprisingly, it was very entertaining. You know, we didn't book a lot of guests tonight, boxing heads. You know, what we wanted to do, really honestly, was give out our Christmas list that, you know, Gabriel has been working on. And then I wanted to give out my top 15 things boxing heads would like to hear, see, or know you didn't in boxing. And then have a lot of interaction with boxing fans from all around the world, you know. Merry Christmas. I hope everybody's going to be spending their time with their families. You know, shout out to Espinosa Boxing, who has their little nephew that's in critical condition in the hospital. Our prayers are with you. Carlos Suarez from Boricua Boxing just had a friend recently that passed away. Hey, our prayers are with you, brother. Sorry to hear that. It's always sad to hear somebody's passing on or somebody in ill. So leaving the ring here, the familia here want to lose everybody, you know, goodwill and hopefully, you know, stay strong, man, just for the new year. And so we want to patch in fight fans who do want to call in and speak boxing with myself, your host, Dave Duenas, and your host, Gabriel Montoya on Leaving the Ring, my boxing fans. Of official radio show. So if you want to call in 347-215-7598, please do. We want to talk to anybody that wants to call in and chop it up with us. Number again is 347-215-7598. Hey Gabe, let's patch in our first caller and see what they got to say. Okay, let's see.
I do still have one more point too on the Hopkins thing. It was just that one card had that even round. You know, 10-10 in the 10th. I don't see how anybody scored at that. It's just absolutely ridiculous. You know,
I know.
It was not a close round.
No, it wasn't at all.
You know, it was actually the difference on that person's card. Had they scored that round for Hopkins correctly, that 114-114 would have changed. It would have been 114 or 113-115 when Hopkins would have gotten the nod.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's what a lot of people were talking about, you know, robbery. But, you know, like I said, you know, we're very passionate when it comes to our sport, very passionate when it comes to our fighters. So our choice of words in the beginning could, you know, kind of be a little over exaggerated. Then you got to kind of lean back and look at what's going on and say, you know what, well, it was tough, But I think what happened there was this guy just didn't see what we were seeing, which was B-Hop taking out, taking the later rounds and dominating in those late rounds, you know? And
well, it's strange, too, because this guy scored the first round correctly. He scored it a 10-9, you know, because Hopkins was winning, but Pascal dropped him. He scores that round right, and then he goes 10-10 in the 10th. I was just like, I've watched that round like 3-4 times. I don't see how there's any gray area in that round at all.
I don't see how I don't see how
it's more like you looked at his card and went, you know, I don't think they have, you know, the whole tally. They just kind of, they tally it as they go. But maybe in his mind, he was keeping track and going, you know what, if I give this round to Hopkins, he's going to win this fight. You know, who knows?
I think he was winging it. I think he was looking on going, you know what, you know, I don't want to pick against him. I think the old-timer won. I was going to put it 10-10 and see what happens. And then the outcome was a draw. You know what I'm saying?
Well, to me, there's the four criteria. You know, there's was clean punching, effective aggression, ring generalship, and defense. If you can't figure out who won the majority of those four criteria, then I always ask myself, well, who would I have rather been in that round? You know, who took more of a beating? Maybe they both landed the same amount of punches, but whose punches would I prefer not to get hit by? And you go to that criteria, I think. You know, you can ask yourself that question. You know, who's fighting whose fight? I mean, that's all ring generalship. I mean, if you can't decide between those four things, which I don't understand, how could somebody really split that? You know, in a round that isn't like a round of the year candidate, where it's so much action, you just can't decide. You know, both guys got hurt. But this was not that, you know. This was a very nip-and-tuck round that Hopkins was dictating, landing more punches, and kind of making Pascal fight his fight. Even if Pascal lands, you know, the same amount of punches, Hopkins is landing the more telling blows. His defense is a little bit better because he's not getting hit as much or hit as flush. You know, that's two criteria right there. And then ring general is making the other guy fight your fight.
Exactly.
It just made no sense to me. But
no.
What are you going to do?
No. You know, I watched that fight, you know, not just once, twice. I watched it three times, and I still keep walking away going, God, you know what? I just have a feeling Bernard Hopkins took this one, you know, at least by a point or even by two. But then again, you know, the Canadians probably have it a lot different, you know. And we did try to get a hold of Pascal. You know, my bad. I made a last-minute call. I should have called him a little earlier. Just been extremely, extremely busy. But we're going to try to get him on the show and see what he thinks. You know, I know he thinks that he probably won. But deep down inside, I think he kind of knows, hey, you know what? The old-timer got up on one above me on this one here. But let's patch in some fight fans here, Gabe. Let's see Sam, who wants to talk some boxing. You're on live right now. Leaving the ring, brother. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's going on, dudes? I was just, you know, I'm actually 15 years old, so I guess I'm considered young, right? And I was just, you know, I started watching, like, fights recently and getting really into boxing. You know, I'd say I know a lot about boxing now. Like, I don't want to say I'm an expert or anything, but anyway, I was actually thinking about stepping in the ring, you know, starting to box.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I watched the Pacquiao fight recently. And he's clearly the best fighter ever, and I'm just inspired by that. And anyway, I was so about me like starting to fight. I was just the one thing that I'm confused on. You know, I know a lot about boxing now. I just don't know, like which is better, like to use like the you know like the black gloves or just like the traditional red gloves. I'm confused on which is better.
Oh, you know, a lot of that just comes down to feel. You know, if you begin, you know, you'll find.
Well, I love how black feels in my hands compared to red, but which would give me more power?
It kind of depends on the manufacturer, really. You know, some of the Everlast gloves that are now coming out are more of the traditional puncher's gloves, which is really like the Reyes brand, which is the blue.
Right.
If you go back and watch a lot of Trinidad fights, he was a big fan of the puncher glove. It's a much smaller glove. You know,
yeah,
also
The color blue makes me like it doesn't make me concentrate that good, and the color green gives me an erection, so I can't use those.
You may have to consult your astrologist as well as your fight trainer. But really, it comes down to it's not really about some of them are color coded, but really it comes down to the amount of ounces that are in there, what they made them of. You know, some of them use I think the Everlast are going back to the traditional horsehair. It really all kind of comes down to what feels best on you. I've tried multiple types of gloves, and I prefer Everlast. I just kind of like the way they feel on my hands.
And you might want to play with yourself a little bit if the green is giving you an erection there, buddy, and stuff, you know.
I don't know what that's about.
It's just a tip and stuff like that. You know, if you watch something about Mary, he says something pretty interesting that all us gentlemen know and stuff. He's, you know, take care before you go on the date so you don't have a spill. Anyways, man.
What I use is the it's made with Evergel. It's the Everlast Protex 2. I use that as a bag glove. I believe these are 14 ounces. No, actually, these are 12-ounce gloves, which you won't be using in sparring because you got to use big gloves for that. But if you're just using it as a bag glove, hitting the heavy bag, really the Protex 2 Everlast are pretty amazing. They really mold to your hand after a while. And they're probably my favorite glove I've ever used. I mean,
I got to put that to my stupidest things that boxing wannabe boxing fans, you know, say, like, you know, I let him go. I clearly knew that this guy was not even a boxing fan, you know, especially when he's saying, you know, the red and black glove. Come on. Everybody knows there's names to particular brands.
He's 15, you know.
When he says Manny Pacquiao is the greatest fighter of all time, we already know.
You just got to educate him, you know. I mean, if you're still listening, Sugar Ray Robinson is the greatest fighter of all time. I suggest you go back and find as much tape as you can of him, although you won't be able to find a lot of his real prime stuff at welterweight. I don't think much footage, if any, really exists of prime Sugar Ray Robinson. That's the greatest fighter of all time. Manny Pacquiao is arguably the greatest fighter of modern times. That's a long discussion we could have on a different show because the best boxer in the world is Floyd Mayweather. They won't fight each other. We won't really find out who's the best guy until – don't let the sham belts fool you. Manny's only got about, I think, five belts. The one at welterweight doesn't count. The lightweight one was a paper belt, and the one with Margarito was, again, a paper belt. So he's really only got five as opposed to eight that really count. Everything else is just kind of pure marketing. So
absolutely.
Continue the education. If you're only 15, you just started. You got a long way to go, brother. You have to have
something
every day.
And you got to come up with better jokes, you know. The jokes have got to come up better. Hey, Gabe, really quick and stuff. Danny Jacobs, are we calling him in or is he calling in himself?
He's going to call me and I'm going to patch him in.
Oh, great. 6 o'clock. Yeah. Okay, so right now somebody's claiming that they're Danny Jacobs. Is probably not even really Danny Jacobs. So, you know.
No.
Nice try, buddies. You got us the flat the last time. It's not going to work again.
I just texted him like about an hour ago or so, and I said, just call my phone. I'll patch you in. So Danny and I, that's not Danny.
Yeah, you know. I figured that and stuff, you know. We're a little too quick for these morons and stuff that have nothing better to do. Anyways, but hey, going back to
today.
You know what we do? We got some little funny guys, you know. And you know, funny thing is that the first time he called, his number did come up, so I wrote it down. I'd be giving you a call later. Let's see if you like my crank calls after the show. Anyways, anyways, this is your boy 97 Rough Dave Duenas with your host and Gabriel Montoya. The number to call in is 347-215-7598. And call in, leave it a ring, speak some boxing with us. The news, the big news right now in boxing for the new year, to start off the new year in 2011, is to see Manny Pacquiao versus Sugar Shane Mosley. Obviously, it's not a fight that a lot of hardcore fight fans want to see. Casual fight fans, I think they did want to see it because they really don't know. I think that's the key word, casual. They didn't know the significance of Manny kind of stepping in with a guy that shouldn't be stepping in with Manny at this point of his career. A lot of fight fans upset about it. They voiced their opinion. I got to tell you, Gabe, was not too happy about the choice. You know what I mean? There's not a whole lot we could do now. It is signed and dotted. It's gonna happen May 7th. But I got to hear your thoughts, and I'd like to hear boxing fans, if you want to call in and chop it up with us and tell us your thoughts. 347-215-7598. Call in, but I'll let you know right now. If you have a private call, if you are on a block number, you're not going to be patched in and stuff. This is a serious boxing show. We're just not going to play around. We got a lot of things to cover. So if you have a block call, you're not going to be patched in. Anyways, Gabe, what's your thoughts, man?
You know, I think this fight really opens up a lot of interesting questions. It's not the fight I wanted. You know, I was championing Andre Berto just because I wanted to see a challenge. You know, instead we've got Sugar Shane Mosley, who, you know, he's got some speed. He's got single-shot power. you know, he hurt Floyd Mayweather. He's been at the higher weights. You know, I'm trying to make a case for him at this point. You know, and he likes to fight. Manny likes to fight. That benefits Shane in the sense that Manny's aggression, although I don't think they're going to approach him that way. So it would be silly to stand and trade with him. You know, Manny's going to do what he does, dart in and out, throw a lot of punches, move to the side, and rinse, repeat, you know. I don't think this fight's the end of the world, just like I don't think one fight can ruin boxing or save boxing. I don't think one fight can ruin boxing. There's plenty of good fights. I think really what this fight says, really what the last few fights of Manny's have said, is that he's done challenging himself. The period of time where he was, you know, moving up and taking on real challenges or looking in his division and for the real challenge and fighting those fights ended with that second Marquez fight. Everything else has been calculated risk. And now to this point, you know, I mean, look at how they didn't want to fight Shane when he was still considered dangerous. They wanted him to move down in weight, all these stipulations. Now that he's looked bad in a couple fights, and he went away from Golden Boy, which is probably the key factor here, then they make the fight, you know. And I think it's insulting to fight fans for them to hit us with this hype, but fight fans, you don't necessarily break the records. It is the casual fan that's the guy that gets you in the millions, the guys that perceive this as, I know that name. I think he's dangerous. Let's see that fight. And I think that's, you know, that's really who they're marketing to. They don't really care about. Obviously, they don't really care what you and I think or what the hardcore fans think. They're going to keep trying to tell us this is a tough fight, and it isn't. I mean, I think maybe in some sense it's not going to be an easy fight. You know, Shane's never been stopped. He's been made to look really bad. He's been outboxed. But most of the people that have outboxed him have been bigger than him, have had dominant jabs, like, you know, Winky Wright and for Vernon Forrest. Manny Pacquiao's not that guy. But at the same time, you know, I think everybody's banking that Shane doesn't have much left, and so this fight isn't very compelling, you know. But look at the other choice. You had Juan Manuel Marquez at 135, or really the fight was probably going to be like 140 or 147. Would that fight have been any more competitive? No, I don't think it would have. Not above 135, it wouldn't have been. Maybe 140, that Marquez can surprise us, but I just doubt it. So really the guy left would be Berto. And, you know, Berto's untested. He hasn't fought a big name. You know, Kermit Cintron was out calling him out today. You know, and he's not, he probably won't take that challenge. Who knows where he goes? But he's young, fast, powerful, can move very well. He might give Manny a chance, and he hasn't looked bad in his last few fights, and he's undefeated. All those things say that, you know, Berto's not going to get the shot. So we got this fight, you know. But to me, I think fans, rather than freaking out and saying boxing is dead or this is the end and this is, you know, all is lost now, I think what we really should say is just the period of time where Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, I would throw him in that same mix, were relevant top-level fighters, relevant meaning they're going to change or alter the course of a division, is over. And now we have to look to the other guys. You know, Sergio Martinez is still trying to make a statement. The 118-pounders, you know, Montiel and Donaire, as the rest of the guys that are in the tournament. Those are the guys that are relevant to me. The 168-pounders, what's going on with the light heavyweights right now, that stuff's relevant. Manny Pacquiao is boxing in the Manny Pacquiao League, and good luck to him. You know, I'm not going to crap all over him, but I'm not that interested either.
Well, here I go. I'm going to shit all over him right now about this fight.
All right.
You know, my thing is this, is that I've heard that already. You know, what else is left out there for Manny Pacquiao? You know, Timothy Bradley, Devin Alexander's got a fight in January. What's one more month? What's one more month after May to schedule the winner, to face the winner in June? Marquez, hey, you know what? When's the last time we've seen Manny Pacquiao get in with somebody equal or in not having all the advantages? You know, fight him at 140. I know that 140 may not be the best for Marquez, but still it's more competitive. Mosley, my problem with the Mosley fight, Gabe, and I think everybody's problem is this, is that he's a one-handed fighter now. You know, he's not as explosive as he used to be. Even with Floyd Mayweather, Floyd really showed pressure in that fight. He showed that he let his hands go. He showed that he could tag him with more than one, two, three, four punch combinations. Manny's just going to do the exact same thing. Does Floyd Mayweather fight like Manny Pacquiao? No, but you know what? He showed a lot of aggression in the time they did face him and Mosley back in May 1st. And why? This is my whole thing, too. And we've heard my rant before about this, you know. Manny Pacquiao moves up to 154, but doesn't make the weight to get a vacant bout that was by Sergio Martinez, gets the bout, fights a guy that honestly didn't deserve to have the title. It was just the title given to him so that it can make it look more lucrative to the casual fans to get a hold of that, calling Manny Pacquiao a ninth world titleist or whatever he is now. I don't even know how many titles the guy has anymore.
Eight.
You know, eight. There you go. He's not even forced by the sanction body to defend it, which is a legitimate challenge. At 154, Sergio Martinez has been campaigning in his last, three, four fights at 160, you know, or even coming in at 157. So you could fairly say he would be draining Sergio Martinez at 154 because he hasn't campaigned over a year in that fight or more.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, his last fight was 158. The public fight was 160. That's the 2010 fights. And yeah, actually, the Paul Williams fight in December of 2009 was at 160. The last junior middleweight fight that Martinez fought was February. It was Valentine's Day against Kermit Cintron. So yeah, you know, I mean, he would be. But he says he can make 154. But
saying and making
it.
Yeah, saying and making it. My selling point to this is that, you know, you got a champion right now is the undisputed middleweight champion. He wants his title back, 154. You know, he feels, hey, you know what? I don't know if you remember, the very first time he was on the show, he said, you know, when he was going to face Kelly Pavlik, he said, you know, if I win that title, I'm not really sure if I'm going to hold on to the title. I still want to go back to 154. I still think that that's my division and I need to clean it out. I like when he said that, and I still think that he believes in that and that he would want to do it. My whole thing with Manny Pacquiao is the last time we've seen Manny in a really real challenge is when he stepped in with Marquez for the second time. After that, it's been David Diaz, De La Hoya, which you could say was a lot of us were duped in believing that De La Hoya can make an 147 and still look terrible and beat Manny. We were duped into it. We got to admit to it and stuff. But you know, then Ricky Hatton, and then you know Cotto, and then Kalati, Margarito. All these guys have been beaten prior. None of these guys have came into the ring with dominant performances. It could make it say, where anybody could say, you know what? Here's even grounds. Mosley now he's not there's no advantage for Mosley in this fight except for his name. That's the problem that I have with this fight.
Yeah, I guess if I want to play devil's advocate, you know, Mosley looked bad against Mayorga. And everybody said he was done. There was no way he was going to be, you know, competitive anymore. Took him forever. You know, last second, he knocks out Mayorga. This is like, you know, September 2008. He doesn't fight again until Margarito in January 2009. And going into that fight, everybody said, oh, he's crap. He's going to lose. Margarito's going to own him and knock him out. I was one of the guys saying that you know, it was going to be a late stoppage for Margarito. And what does he do? He comes in and knocks him out and looks spectacular. Can he do that again? I mean, because you look at the demeanors and the styles of Mora. Mora is much bigger than Shane, for one. But his demeanor is one that he doesn't want to fight. He moves and moves and moves. He, you know, kind of punches, then grabs you. It makes it as ugly as possible. And then Floyd, who fought a very aggressive fight, but not recklessly aggressive. It wasn't like he was throwing three and four punch combinations. He was throwing one jab, good right hand, move out of the way. You know, he dominated him, but in a very slow-paced manner. Manny is a much more aggressive and recklessly aggressive pressure fighter. He's going to be there to be hit. You know, he's got a 67-inch reach to Shane's 74-inch reach. Now, granted, you know, Floyd is, 72. He's got a smaller reach and was able to get Shane, although he does turn his shoulders and he gains about 3 inches by doing that when he punches, particularly with his jab.
Right.
And he doesn't really do that. He kind of squares himself up and comes forward, giving up any sort of length that he might have. It's an interesting fight if Shane does a few, you know, key things like we had talked about when he was on the show. If he can use his jab and in a strong manner, not in a flicking manner where Mandy can come over the top of it, but in a telephone pole kind of way, I don't think he can do that. He did it against Margarito, but I just don't see him doing it. And I don't know
there's
if
a lot
can
of
with lateral movement. He doesn't move his head very well.
There's no more body shots. He doesn't throw any body shots like he used to back in his younger days. You know, I mean, this guy was known.
The balance is bad.
Yeah, the balance is not there anymore. You know, even this saying that, you know, Floyd Mayweather was aggressive but intelligently, and Manny's more, you know, aggressive and throws five or six punches, but Manny does get out of the way, and Manny turns you before he attacks, so he knows that you're not balanced, you know. I like that when he does that. I just see, you know, even if Mosley has him there long enough to throw a punch, I still don't see him landing it because he's going to be too busy putting his hands up to avoid punches or taking just some hellacious shots from Manny Pacquiao before he could even return anything to him. That's I hate to say it, you know, but you know, and I want to root for Mosley, and I'm not knocking. He got this fight. You know what? More power to you, brother. You got to pay your bills and whatever else you got going on in your life and stuff. But as a fight fan, as a consumer, God, you know what? It's really hard for me to dish out anything for this one.
But if you look at it this way, that if you just accept that Manny's no longer taking challenges, and he hasn't for a while, it's kind of like a few months ago, I finally just let go of the idea that, you know, a lot of Floyd fans would say, yeah, but, you know, after this fight, just you wait, he's going to take on so-and-so. And they've been saying it for a long time. And I just kind of let go that was ever going to happen. That, you know what, this guy moved. My big problem with Floyd was that when he left 135, you know, when you're a weight jumper, you're generally, in those first few weight classes, you're a little bit big for them. And so you should tear through them and get your belts. And then you move in, and there's a period where you kind of prime and hit your natural weight. And when Oscar De La Hoya did it, he hit 147, and boom, he took on, you know, Trinidad. He took on Quarte. You know, he finished out Obakar, who was pretty much done anyways. He fought Pernell Whitaker, who was fading, but still, you know, I thought he won that fight. And there was certainly a lot left in the tank for Pernell, who was later on competitive with Trinidad. Those guys took on the best guys when they were in their prime weight.
Exactly.
And Floyd kind of avoided that period and went straight to the super fights like Oscar did, because Oscar eventually kind of went off into the sunset and started taking on these big fights, although he still took dangerous fights fighting Manny Pacquiao and Floyd when he was way past his prime and Hopkins. Floyd never really hit that period. And in a sense, I think Manny did. He just wasn't a superstar yet, and they've molded him into a superstar. But he's not going to take challenges. So if you look at Shane, and there's this word that I really hate, deserve, that people always talk about. Well, you know, Marquez deserves the fight, or Berto doesn't deserve the fight. Look at what Shane Mosley has given us his whole career. We're turning on him because he's faded. But really, he's a faded guy who's fighting a guy that doesn't want any challenges. So in a sense, we almost can congratulate Shane and say, you know what? You fought Vernon Forrest when Oscar wouldn't and when Floyd wouldn't. You fought Winky Wright in the same manner. You know, Floyd and Oscar never wanted any part of him. You know, Shane gave us fights that he didn't need to take. He could have said, you know what, Winky, I'm not going to fight you. I'm going to fight Oscar for $13 million in the rematch or in the trilogy. And then I'm going to fight, you know, Felix Trinidad and make a ton of money in a winnable fight. Instead, he took on Winky Wright because he was the best guy in the division, and he wanted to prove that he was the best guy in the division. If anybody really deserves something, I think Shane, you know, bad decisions or not, has taken short money for years and taken challenges that fight fans should thank him for. So in one sense, I can almost say, you know what, good for you, Shane. You're going to get a big payday. It's a fight that not anybody's really excited about.
But you know what?
We're kind of turning on him for fading, you know?
Yeah, you know, Gabe, I feel you on that. And I like I said before, I'm not knocking Shane for getting this fight because he worked to get this fight. He wants this fight. He asked for this fight. But you got to put – my thing is you point the finger at the guy that accepted the fight when knowingly knowing this is not the fight that's going to prove anything anymore. You know, for people to be saying that, oh, you know, this guy's the greatest we've ever seen. He's better than Muhammad Ali, better than Roberto Duran, better than – come on. I mean, let's quit with that already. Let's have the guy fight somebody. I had a listener put on my Facebook. He said, Manny Pacquiao is a cheap cherry picker and Floyd's a ducker. You know, making comparisons, saying that, well, you know, I'd rather have, he says, I'd rather be a hero. This is what he's pretty much stating. I'd rather have a hero that cherry picks than a hero that ducks. And I told him, those two things are both in, they're different in food category. One's fruit, one's meat. But after you eat them, they're the same. They're shit. You know what I'm saying? I want to put some fight fans through that have been on hold. They want to talk about this fight. So it's Patch and Zach. What's up, brother? What's on your mind? You're on Leave It in the Ring.
It was Jack.
Oh, it's Jack. You put Zach on here. My bad, brother. How you doing, man?
Close enough, man. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind, brother?
I just want to talk about how people are saying that Mosley doesn't have or he doesn't deserve it. But, like, who else are they going to get? They're going to get another Mexican to fight him? Like, he's already been through enough Mexicans. He's already embarrassed enough of him.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Gabe.
What would you prefer if you didn't have Mosley? I mean, you're happy with the fight, is what I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I think he's the right guy for it. He's, you know, but who else are going to get him there?
Well,
I think you've got
the 140 pounders. You know, that you could wait for the winners of that, or you could fight Andre Berto. He's got five defenses of his WBC title. They're not great defenses, but he's got them. And you've got a belt at 147. You say you're the best guy at that weight. Well, why don't you clean out the division? I mean, when's the last time Shane Mosley was relevant at 147? It's probably 2009.
Alberto's too green.
I would agree.
I don't know that.
I would agree. But that's, you know. But again, like I think I said earlier, this opens up a lot of questions. And here's really the thing: I think boxing fans feel like Manny owes them a tough fight, or that Bob Arum does, and they really, that's certainly not the case. You know, Bob has promoted and built Manny Pacquiao. At the same time, he's built up the opposition within his own stable. You know, guys like Margarito and Claudie and Cotto, so that when the time comes to match up guys and make big fights, he's got guys with fan bases, and he makes tons of money doing it. He promotes the right way. You know, who's to say this isn't, you know, why should he give Andre Berto a shot? Why should he give Tim Bradley a shot? What do they bring to the table other than danger and no ticket sales? You know, so there is that, you know. I agree with you that Berto's very green. But, you know, Leon Spinks, had like 7-8 fights when he beat Muhammad Ali late in his career?
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of guys that were green and then emerged. You know, some people say, you know, Sergio Martinez shouldn't have been in the position he's in. Who'd he ever beat? You know, and look at him now. I don't know, you know. To me, if it was just boxing and it wasn't my money, I'd want to see the Berto fight. You know, maybe he's green, but maybe he shows us something that we didn't know about.
Well, that's how you find out, too. I mean, that's how you find out if this guy is just going to stay contender or is there any greatness. I mean, let's look at it this way here, Jack. I mean, Manny Pacquiao, what did he do to be in the position he's at? You know, if nobody gave him a chance, he would not be the money cash cow at this moment. You got to give guys opportunities, and that's what hardcore fight fans want. We want to see opportunities.
You should give guys opportunities. You don't have to because of the way the sport is run. It's a series of business transactions. It is, they're all operating in their own separate leagues. I mean, you know, Golden Boy could put on 140 tournament, which they pretty much are on their own. They bulked at including Devin Alexander and Tim Bradley were the two best 140-pounders in the world, arguably. They didn't want them in it. They'd rather do it themselves. That's all Bob Arum is doing. Everybody always points to Top Rank and says they only do in-house fights. Everybody does in-house
Everybody
fights.
Everybody does it. It's a big problem. It's a big problem in our boxing community. These promoters are doing – they're all doing the same thing. They're all following the same pattern and stuff.
Well,
Jack?
What I think is a bigger problem is just that we only have one promoter in the U.S. anyways – that does it as well as Top Rank, and that's Top Rank. To me, the big problem isn't that they don't, you know, that they operate separately. It's that they operate separately because nobody has any leverage. You don't see Ludabella building Berto into a ticket seller. You don't see Tim Bradley selling out the Agua Caliente, which is only a 2,000 or 3,000 seat, theater. You know, where are all these draws? You know, why should Manny, who brings, he can fight me and make $14 million and sell, you know, probably 500,000 pay-per-views, maybe 350,000 would pay to see me get my ass beat. But he could do well on his own. So why should he go challenge himself if he can make the same amount of money against a guy he can beat than he would against a guy that might beat him and end that streak of making money? You know, as soon as he loses that, loses his streak that he's on, it's going to be harder for him to sell tickets. Just like
I don't
Floyd.
Think it's going to be harder for him to sell tickets, Gable. Come on, I mean, how many times did Oscar
Del Boy? It depends on how he loses. What would everybody say? What would everybody say if? And this is my other least favorite word in boxing. If Manny Pacquiao took on a young challenge and say Berto knocks him out in 6 rounds, that he's exposed and that the whole thing's been a sham this whole time. How are you going to sell him the next time if the first time he takes on somebody tough in years, he gets knocked out or loses badly? You know what I mean?
That to me is just you have to find out and wait and see. I mean, you know, we would have to find out to see if that would even happen. And then we go from there. I mean, what if it say it doesn't happen? What if it say that he gets dropped, gets up, drops Berto drops him, and it's a war, but he still loses? Does he gain more fight fans? Does he gain the respect from haters? Why not try to go with that drive? I mean, why not go with that one there?
But then, why? I don't think he really needs to gain more fans. He's topping out at 1 million pay-per-views. It doesn't really get much higher than this, you know. And it's also he's going to add miles. Say he does beat those guys, but it's a tough fight. I mean, look how Margarito marked him up, beat him up, even in a one-sided effort. What if he gets in a war like this? Then you're thinking down the line, he could do at this pace 2-3 more fights like this. Maybe even
so wait a minute. So what I'm hearing is basically let him not want to fight any fresh or dangerous challenges, but yet he's fresh and dangerous, but he could beat up on guys that are washed up. Does that make any sense?
It
does for Top Rank, but it doesn't make sense in the boxing world. I mean, come on. I mean, listen. I understand people want to keep seeing. If you're a big Manny Pacquiao fan, you want to keep seeing him win. But if you're even a bigger Manny fan, don't you want to see him be in something competitive for once? I mean, you're going to dish out $50, and Jack, are you telling me you're going to spend $50 just to see a one-sided fight and be happy about it?
No, I will not be happy at all, man.
You know what I mean? I mean, I think that's what a lot of us are. You know, a pay-per-view fight, a super fight to me is two guys being competitive, and you're happy to spend it. It shouldn't be a pay-per-view fight then at all. Put it on HBO. It's going to be one-sided.
I would pay $50 to see Berto fight, but I'm not going to pay $50 to see a damn Mexican that's going to go get plaster at Home Depot and put it in his gloves, and, you know?
And then, a lot of people paid $50 for that damn Mexican to get beat up for 12 rounds, you know what I mean? And now you're going to dish out another $50 for another guy that a lot of us call a Mexican too, get beat up for 12 more rounds.
That's true. I agree.
You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah,
why not?
I think
and
it really
I
just comes down
to
you
spend some money to see some wetback get the shit kicked out of him. I do that every Friday night.
Wow. Well, as a Mexican American, I'm pretty fucking offended by that comment.
Go back to Home Depot then you won't have to.
Is he gone?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Anyways, you can't argue with stupid. I mean, it's hard to argue with dumb, you know.
When you get down in the mud with somebody, it's hard to tell who's who. I just cut them off. Don't even need to deal with that comment. But, I mean, you call a show co-hosted by two Mexican guys and make comments like wetback. I mean, my mother was an illegal alien. She got naturalized. Incredibly offended by that. I'll tell you what, you see me ringside, say that one to my face. See how long if you actually get that sentence out of your mouth. Anyways,
I think everybody's mother's been wet in their back one time or another.
Wow. Well,
so that guy. No, I'm just saying that guy over there calling anybody a wetback. You know. Anyways, I tell you what, I've heard that many times. I don't get offended with it. I get plenty of letters that tell me to go back to Mexico, etc. And I say, what's the point? I'd still be saying the same shit I'm saying now.
Yeah, nobody would understand me. Let me
patch in Jason really quick. What's up, brother? What's on your mind?
Dave, what's good? What's good? What's going on, everybody? Gabe, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, brother. Hey, thanks for calling in, man.
Yo, I mean, I'm hearing all this talk about with Mosley and Pacquiao, but I mean, how many people would want to see Pacquiao fight Gabriel Montoya?
I think that would last longer than I would.
You, Gabe, so you know that, right?
I know, man. I know.
I don't think, that would not last long, let me tell you. It would be, I'd look like Murad Hakkar against Hopkins. I would just run and run and run, hide behind the ref. It'd be like Charlie Chaplin. It would be very ugly.
Hey, man, shit, for $18 million, I'll step in the ring with the man.
Huh. Stuff, you know?
Yeah, you could do a catch weight and even a hand weight. You know, I'll just put, like, you know, a weight in my hand and tape it to my back. You can just beat on me. You know, $18 million, done, right now.
Word up. Listen, I've been tuning in for like the last 5 or 10 minutes. I'm over here in Philadelphia right now in the hospital. My sister just had a baby. And,
oh, congratulations.
I just want to, thanks a lot, guys. You know, I'm calling in because, you know, I love what you guys do, and I want you to keep on doing what you're doing, you know, giving the fans what they want to hear. You know, and in behalf of Boricua Boxing and JC Styles, we want to wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
hey,
man.
Brother, same way. Same thing here.
Respect to you, man. Much respect to you guys and what you're doing, and just really appreciate that.
Absolutely. That's what we're all about. We're all about giving the fans what they want to hear, you know?
Yeah,
right now,
absolutely.
My battery is running so low right now that I don't know if I'm going to get cut off any minute, but, you know, I want to...
Hey, well, congratulations first off to your sister, brother, and Merry Christmas. You know, what a great present for her to receive, you know, in this time right now. Hey, thanks again,
man,
for calling in and giving the shout-out, brother. We always appreciate your guys' support from Boricua Boxing.
When are you
Absolutely.
Coming out to the
Anytime,
West Coast, guys. Man? When are you coming out
I'm
here?
I'm thinking about doing Vegas in, I think it's in March.
Okay.
When are they going to – I'm thinking about doing Vegas in March. You going to go?
For the Codo Margarita or the Codo Mayorga?
The Codo Mayorga.
That's my birthday month, so I think I'm going to treat myself to a trip to Vegas in March. So, I will definitely be out there, man. We'll have to hang out and enjoy the fights.
Definitely, We'll do a tweet up. We'll do a tweet up right after the fight and get drunk and all fucked up.
There you go, brother.
Am I allowed to say that on air?
And you're allowed to say web bat everything if you want on air, brother. Don't matter.
All right, man. I already dropped the first F bomb of the night. So you're
absolutely. All right, then fuck it. Hell yeah.
All right, brother.
All right, be cool, y'all. Be cool.
Merry
Have a good night.
Okay,
all right,
Merry Christmas, y'all.
Yeah, Merry Christmas too.
That was actually really great meeting all those guys, meeting him and Carlos from Boricua Boxing, Fabulous Matty, all the people that are in the industry on the internet and a lot of the folks we talked to on Twitter. They definitely made my trip to the East Coast worthwhile, man. It was just fantastic. One of the highlights of my year, you know. Not just the fight and all that, which was pretty magical in and of itself, but just meeting all those people was pretty awesome, you know. let's patch in another angry fan.
A disgruntled Manny Pacquiao fan that gets upset about things that we say.
I've had computer issues this week, so I haven't had any good Twitter wars. So,
I got to say, you know what, man? This is what I tell everybody, you know, if it comes down to insulting somebody's race or anything else, boxing's not for you, man. Go to tennis. Go play volleyball or something. Go play with some Barbie dolls, you know what I mean, where people are sensitive. People want to hug and cry and talk about this and that. This is boxing. This is what we do here in boxing. You know, we criticize fighters. We praise fighters. We knock down promoters. We celebrate promoters that do the right thing. This is what we do on Leaving the Ring and stuff. And, I'm telling you right now, you're calling in, you're saying these funny remarks and stuff. And just to be a prick, you know, the guy, last guy that called in and stuff, you know, his number is what, 914-329-9830 and stuff. You want to be funny? There you go right there. I'm being funny right back at you.
Wow.
Anyways, man, like I said, you know what? Let's talk about the whole Miguel Cotto and Ricardo Mayorga that's being talked about in March. You know, I said, if anything, that's going to be pretty interesting just in the press conference, you know, when these guys stand toe-to-toe, face-to-face to exchange some words. I don't know if Cotto's going to be up to par when it comes to Ricardo Mayorga. You know, we know he spits fire, and we know he spits whatever he has on his mind. He's a lot worse than Bernardo Hopkins when it comes to the gab there. Just curious in how well... Is Miguel Cotto going to be able to keep out Ricardo Mayorga out of his head?
I think all he needs to do is look at his body, and he'll be in his last fight, and he should be able to be fine with the trash talk. I mean, I don't know if you saw the Mayorga fight just recently this last week against Michael Walker. You look decent, you know. Michael Walker is a journeyman, guy there to be beat. He did give Danny Jacobs some tough trouble, but that was, I think, about five fights ago. And really, you know, Mayorga, he's just there to sell some tickets, to make Cotto look good, probably set up a Cotto Margarito 2 later on in the year. It's on pay-per-view on top of it. I'll probably go to cover it, but like I said, the reason I'll go to Vegas in March is because it's my birthday, not because this is a compelling matchup. I mean, you want to talk insulting the fans, putting this fight on a pay-per-view, it pretty much just says, yeah, we really don't care what you think at all. Man. We're gonna sell this to you, and you're gonna like it. And you know, I always just say to fight fans, you know, your wallet is the most powerful thing in the sport. And really, if you don't like this fight, don't buy it. Let Bob know how you feel by not buying this fight. You know, find some other way to see it, or ignore it, or if you have HBO, wait a week and watch it that way. But let him know how insignificant this fight is, because it really is. I mean, granted, Cotto's at the end of his career, and I think he needs more good matchmaking than Manny does. Just looking at this thing, does he really need that much of a security blanket? I mean, is he gone that far that we have to do this kind of fight?
when we talk about, I mean, this is the same thing. I mean, you could kind of now throw out there that what Top Rank is doing is using a marketable name, a guy that can really draw fans' attention, casual fans' attention, is Ricardo Mayorga, the guy that smokes and drinks in the ring. You know, this guy just, man, when it comes to insults, this guy takes the cake, man. You know, he can write up a book full of insults.
Yeah.
And he'll either make you cringe, he'll make you laugh, or he'll make you say, "No, we didn't," you know. And is it an interesting fight? To a point. Or is this a way of Top Rank saying, we may be having the last leg of Miguel Cotto, and we need to take advantage as much as we can and market his name out there to probably sell him off to, I don't know, a possible Manny Pacquiao 2 or a Margarito 2, you know what I mean? To intrigue it. You know, Margarito getting a one-sided beatdown for Manny Pacquiao, there was talks about them going at it again, you know, Miguel Cotto and Antonio Margarito. Maybe Top Rank and his team went back and they sat there and said, is it marketable right now after seeing what happened in Antonio Margarito? Will people buy into it? You know what? And Cotto having his last fight with Yuri Foreman, is that still marketable? Is it going to spark up any interest? Maybe seeing Miguel Cotto get in with a big guy like Mayorga, who's been known to blow up to 107 pounds, and take a one-sided beating, not just from Trinidad. You know, we did it with Oscar De La Hoya. His last successful win was over a blown-up Fernando Vargas. Give him to Miguel Cotto. Let Miguel Cotto do whatever he can. Mayorga is definitely going to sell the fight with his mouth. Let him have a good run, a good win over a marketable name, and then put him back in with Antonio Margarito. I think that's what they're trying to run. A pay-per-view is just, wow. Dude, come on. You know what I mean? I mean, we're in a recession time, Bob. I know you're riding up in the limousine Benz, and you're doing everything you can, and you're looking good. I mean, I think the word recession doesn't even fit in your vocabulary word, because you're not in recession. You're making all the money off of us little guys, us blue-collar guys that are just out there, you know, getting calluses in our hands and, you know, just beating ourselves up just to dish out this money. I don't know about you, Gabe, but in order to sell this one, they're going to have to put up some really good undercards for me even to say, yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah, for me to even say, you know, this is worth it. This is worth my time. There's going to have to be a lot to happen. I mean, yeah, the undercard, for one, it's you're absolutely right. It better be good, because this is something that I just – you know, I could sit here and play devil's advocate with the Mosley fight and say, well, you know, if Pacquiao stands and trades with him, he's got a shot, you know. In this one, I just say, you know, the one thing I'll say about Mayorga is that he does have a really funky style. He is kind of an awkward guy.
and he throws punches from odd angles. And if he's in good shape and able to do that for a few rounds, you know, Cotto, who is kind of passive in some ways, he kind of waits and waits to see what you're doing, and then he starts to put it together. He can be a little bit of a danger early on, but that's about as good as I could say for Mayorga. I just think in terms of class, he's not in Miguel's class, and it's just, this is just not a good fight to me. You know, it's just, I think this is the problem, is, you know, and here's the thing, is, you know, Top Rank is giving us Montiel versus Donaire. That is a really good fight, and they're promoted by both, you know, promoted by Top Rank. They don't need to do the fight. They could draw it out for a few years, but they're making it, and so they do good things. But then they make fights like this, you know.
Hey, you know what?
Soto and Young, you know, which was a great fight. But then they do this, and you kind of go, these fights, when they benefit themselves, they really benefit themselves, and they're really kind of insulting to the fans. And you know, I mean, it's just like it's just boxing, man. You know, and there's different leagues even within the promotional companies. Cotto was another guy that's in that league. I mean, when's the last time they put him in with somebody that could hurt him? It was Margarito. That was it. You know, that's another Top Rank in-house fight as well. But after that, I mean, Yuri Foreman, you know, not a lot of power, had a knee injury going in. Gee, I wonder if they knew that. You know, you just kind of look at it and say, you know, Miguel's in that same thing. This is not
a Well, I mean, he's a product. You know what I mean? He's no longer a young warrior. He's a product. And, you know, but, you know, I think the thing is this, is that I think a lot of fight fans are not as hard on Miguel just yet. If he was to continue to do, just get names out there that are washed up and make himself look good, I think fight fans would kind of bag on him. But Miguel has just been known to take any opposition, you know, and take them in their prime, you know.
Yeah.
Hasn't shied away, you know. You know,
yeah,
he's
kind of like
a
Mosley in that sense, you know. He just went for it. And, you know, if you look at it, out of all those guys, he's the first guy to go after Mosley. And he's the youngest, you know, of the fighters, you know, of Floyd and Manny. And yet there he was taking on Shane, you know, in a tough, tough fight. Taking on Margarito when Manny and Floyd, you know, Manny wasn't even there yet, but Floyd, you know, avoided him for $8 million. He was like, no, I don't think so. That's not enough money. I'm out of here.
Exactly.
And Cotto was right there with it. But again, that's also Top Rank, you know, making those fights, you know, when they're appropriate, and they say, all right, we got two guys, they can't get any further without fighting each other. They're the two best guys. Let's do this thing, and they do it, you know, and that's, you know, then again, they also avoided, you know, the guy that Cotto should have fought time was probably Paul Williams.
If anything, Miguel Cotto's career is at an end. You know, it's like, where do we shop him now? Where do we put him at now? You know, at 154. I know they were trying to make the Sergio Martinez, but I got to tell you, if they made that, I was not too happy about it with Sergio wanting to take Miguel Cotto. You know, I just kind of looked at it kind of a step down from you knocking out Paul Williams, you know. But I understand there's really nobody out there for Sergio at the moment. And, I mean, Pirog is definitely a fighter. Dmitry Pirog is definitely a guy that should spark up a lot of interest. But is he fully rounded as a fighter right now that who could face Sergio Martinez, who's on an ultra high? I don't know. It doesn't answer a lot of questions about Sergio Martinez if Pirog gets in there. No, it's, if he wins, it just shows that Pirog is just a prospect, you know. Miguel Cotto, now you could definitely say he's just a name to mark it off, you know. And so is Ricardo Mayorga. Now you got two warriors. One is a little more fresher than the other. But going back again, pay-per-view, no. If you put it as an undercard, though, of the Dornier and Montiel, okay, I could see that. If you put all those fights, you know, Soto versus Bam Berrios, all on one night, hey, now that's a sellable pay-per-view card, you know. But unfortunately, promoters don't look at that. They look at one lucrative name, two lucrative names, put them on one card, make that a sole pay-per-view and give you shit undercards and make another one continuously to fill out the months of coming year. It's terrible, you know. Hey, I don't know. What can we say?
I mean, it's just boxing, you know. There's just different. There's no one set way to do this, you know. You build up a guy, and if he gets a big following, then eventually, you know, you can market him in this manner. Really, if you think about it, this is the exact right way to promote a guy. You build him up into a good fighter. At the same time, you build him up into a good draw. You find a venue that he can keep going back to, like they did with the Puerto Rican Day Parade and Cotto fights for years, going back to, I think, Muhammad Abdullayev, that's like 5-6 years ago. And then they built him up. And then hopefully, if the guy's reached a certain status, when he starts to lose, it starts to fade, you can extend his career with these kind of pay-per-view fights or big fights that he makes a lot of money in, but he's going to win, but you can sell it as a perceived threat. That's hopefully what you do with each boxer, and that helps the sport. If you look at some of these other guys, it's like they want it to be on merit only. And like seeing this Bradley-Alexander fight, Alexander's a good draw. Doesn't have enough juice to make the fight happen in St. Louis, but he's a good draw there. And, Bradley is the guy, and he's got some juice. He's the head guy at 140, really. And so they move this fight to a neutral ground to make it. But, they're doing it in a Pontiac. Who the hell's going to go to that fight? That's really not the way you promote, in my opinion. It's not the way you develop fighters. It's the way you develop a fighter, because Bradley's a very complete fighter. But it's certainly not the way you develop a draw. And that's the problem with the sport, is that you have one good promoter. Kathy Dew is another good promoter, but she kind of more takes guys that are a little more established and then extends their careers, still, getting them in good venues and making good money, but not the way Top Rank does it. They take them from the root to the fruit. They develop them, they grow them as fighters, build them into draws, and then boom, here we are. Look at all the rest of promoters. What are they doing to actually build to that point, and be able to say, I've got the same guy in my division who's equal to your guy in every way, from ticket sales to skills. Let's do this thing. There's really nobody that can leverage Top Rank to do that, and so they can get away with doing this.
Well,
basically,
promoters,
and then
take
on top
notes.
Of that, everybody buys the fights.
Yeah, promoters, take notes. Take notes on what's going on and how they're doing this so that you can have leverage and there's no bickering and crying when it comes to negotiations, or even try to get, Top Rank to turn the cheek to say, okay, I have interest here because of the fact is that you are now on the same leverage ground with me. Gabe, before we patch in our guest, Danny Jacobs, and speak to him about what's going on in his career, and he was successful in his win this past weekend on the Bernard Hopkins and Pascal undercard, we might as well just give our Christmas list, and fight fans, if you want to call in and tell us what you want on your boxing Christmas list, you sure can. 347-215-7598. You're definitely more than welcome to call in and leave a ring, chop it up with us here on Leaving a Ring Boxing, 3 hours of boxing talk. Gabe, what do you think, man? You ready to give out your Christmas list here, buddy?
Me? I'm almost ready. I think as we get to more close to the fight schedule, I'm still kind of chopping it up. I'm actually texting with Danny, trying to make sure that he's coming on and everything right now.
Okay.
Why don't we start with the first half of your top 15?
Oh, man. You know what? Okay. Let's go off with my top 15 things boxing heads would like to hear, see, or know you did it in boxing. And a lot of fight fans emailed me at leavingaring@gmail.com and helped me out with this list here. Originally, I was going to do a Christmas list, boxing list, but some of the things that some fight fans were emailing me, man, they were just too funny. I mean, I just thought, I think this is more or less want to hear, see, or know you did it in boxing. So this is with the whole list that a lot of fight fans participated in and stuff. So I hope the listeners and the people that did participate in this list, I hope you enjoy it. So let's go with number 15. Boxing fans, what they want to hear: a ringtone of the security guard's reaction to Mayweather poking at his face. I like to hear that too. You know what I mean? Ow! You just poked me, Floyd. I thought that would be great. Have a ringtone like that, I would call myself numerous times just to hear the guy go, ow, you poked me in the face, money. Number 14. After a bad judgment, the judges are forced to wear a T-shirt stating, what the hell was I watching, and issued an eye exam. I'd love to see that. You know, I'd love to see these guys get an eye exam on, you know, on the telly after they make such a bad judgment call. I think Vegas would be, I think you would have an extra hour of your pay-per-view via or HBO After Dark, or after what the judges do when they pull off, when they give us either a draw or an outrageous, you know, scorecard, you know, that definitely we know that the other guy won. So, and have a T-shirt on wearing that, God. Be classic and stuff. Number 13, lightweight Ali Fanica finally gets a decision over a named fighter he clearly won. That would be something else. What do you think, Gabriel? Ali Fanica, lightweight. That would be something else. You know, Nate Campbell, he's short on the Nate Campbell and Yoan Guzman. A lot of fight fans believe he won that one, so they like to see him just get back in the ring and finally get a win over somebody, okay? Number 12. Yoan Guzman tells us what weight division he campaigns in, and he directs us to the best all-you-can-eat buffet. Oh, yeah. What weight is he? You know, I mean, I'm not sure. I think the last time he came in, he was what, a junior middleweight or a welterweight? I don't know. You never know what that is.
He's a heavyweight. Yeah.
Heavyweight, yeah. A heavyweight. And I'm pretty sure he does know some of the best all-you-can-eat buffets out there and stuff. Number 11 of the top 15 things boxing heads would like to hear, see, or know you did it in boxing. Number 11, HBO Ross Greenberg says, Mr. Al Heyman, I cannot take your word no more. You need to show proof you're a boxing promoter. Love to hear that. Love to hear him tell him that, you know, to let Al Heyman know he's a manager. He's not a promoter. He shouldn't be trying to act like a promoter for fighters or for networks and stuff. Number 10. Floyd Mayweather is sentenced to face Pacquiao or Sergio Martinez. That'd be a punishment enough. I think so, too. I think there's no stipulations are there, and the court wants to be merciful. They would, you know, sentence him to jail, or if they don't want to be merciful, they would sentence him to fighting Manny Pacquiao or Sergio Martinez. I think a lot of fight fans would be satisfied with that. Number 9, Ring Magazine pound-for-pound rating and division rankings finally makes sense. Or please explain your guys' list because they're confusing. Not understanding how you guys are telling up the total.
There's Danny Jacobs.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll run and grab him.
Okay. And number 8. I like this one. Welterweight title holder Andre Berto is zapped with an electric shock every time he tweets, fight fans, who do you want to see me fight next? I think he's notorious for that one, man. I see that like every, at least once every 3 days on his Twitter. Fight fans, who do you want to see? Who do you want me to see fight next? Do you have him on already? Is he on with us?
Yeah, we're on with 150-pound contender Danny the Golden Child Jacobs. Danny, welcome to the show. Do you prefer Danny or Daniel?
It's fine, whatever you prefer.
Okay. Well, Merry Christmas to you, man. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I'm here with my co-host, David Duenas, here on Living in the Ring. First off, I want to congratulate you on your win last week. Can you talk a little bit about how you felt heading into that fight? You hadn't fought since your loss to Pirog. You've been off for some time, and it sounded like a short-notice fight. Can you talk a little bit about everything leading into that bout?
Well, really, it's about, training and this go-around. It wasn't the same as usual. You know, we really try to work on our defensive skills more because, that's the thing I feel like we was lacking. And in the fight, I showed it. You know, I was moving to the right, trying to stay away from his right hand, and staying off the ropes, most importantly. And I think I executed that. So, you know, we're just going to continue to try to sharpen up my defensive skills and, you know, hopefully everything will be okay from here on out.
Hey, Danny, how you doing?
Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ask your question. I'll ask it right after you.
I was just curious if you knew anything about the guy going in, or were you kind of flying blind on this one, just heading in?
Oh, I was pretty much blind. I didn't know anything much about him. I knew that he was tough and that he never been stopped. Even though he had a couple of losses, he was tough and he was in the fight. So, I mean, that's pretty much the picture perfect fight. Somebody that was going to come, take my chance, and make me the rounds. And, he was going to take me the rounds. But, you know, I was working on different things, but I seen the shot, and I just had to get him out of there because you don't get paid for overtime. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know,
Roberto said the same thing to me. Actually, it's funny.
You know, Danny, I'm wondering, did you watch? Have you sat down with your team and watched that Pirog fight?
No, I haven't sat down with my team. I watched it several times, and I've seen the things that I've done wrong that I'm used to doing. The amateur is doing with ease, but you know, as I step up, I realize that the things that I used to do, I can't do now because a lot of guys are more experienced. So you're gonna have to capitalize and just tighten up things and
now,
become a complete fighter.
Now, when you said that you saw the things that you did wrong in this fight, can you explain to me what you thought you did wrong to lose that fight?
Well, I think the main thing I did was I played the ropes a little bit too much. Even though we was up on the cards, I think we was up because we was inside the middle of the ring and using my jab and staying off the back foot and moving. But times that I felt like, you know, I was wrong with staying on the ropes, because the two shots that I got caught with, that was the most powerful shots, were I was against the ropes. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, and in the E.J. Smith fight, I was on the ropes too when I got hurt. So, you know, this, the ropes, I just got to stay away from the ropes. The ropes is not my friend.
Absolutely. You know, what I saw, Danny, was one of the things that I took note to, and I noticed right away, and I was saying to myself and you know, other boxing heads that were around me at the time, was that you were backing up in a straight line, which allowed Pirog to get off on his punch there. Is that something that you look back now and go, you know, why did I do that? Why did I not give him angle?
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right. I don't understand why. Like I said before, it was something that I've always been used to doing, and nobody ever really capitalized off this. So it becomes sort of like a habit. And, you know, he took advantage of my lack of defense and caught me with a good shot.
Absolutely.
You mentioned earlier, too, the scorecard that you were up on. I didn't have you up at the time of the stoppage. Did you feel, going back and looking at the fight, that you were winning, or even just being in the fight, did you feel like you were winning?
Well, being in the fight, I didn't feel like I was winning. You know, personally, I felt like everything was just going wrong. Mentally, physically, I even got tired. I was so winded. Everything was just going downhill, and I really didn't understand why, but, you know, I mean, I try to overcome it, but I couldn't. It was just like one of those bad nights.
Right.
You and I talked. We did a pretty extensive interview about it, and I don't know how much you've talked publicly really about that night, but can you at least talk a little bit about just your mental state heading into the night? You said some stuff that really shocked me about, you know, you in the locker room and just not really feeling like mentally like you were there. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, well, you know, when I spoke to you, I told you I was crying in the locker room before the bout because of my grandmother. Like, someone yelled out, "Oh, this is for your grandma." So it kind of brought me to tears. So my mind state was going into there. It was very terrible. And if I could do it again, I probably would have pulled out. But, you know, what happened is what happened. But my state right now, my mind state is fine. Like, you know, I joke about the night. You know, I can laugh about it now. And, you know, I'm a man at the end of the day. So all I can do is just come back and be a better fighter.
What kind of jokes?
Yeah.
What kind of jokes, Danny, are you making?
Well, it's mostly jokes about family. About, you know, how everybody reacted when they see me go down, and I said, you know, how I felt when I was looking at the ref, just stuff like that. You know, you laugh about things like that because if you take it too serious, you know, it really could affect your performance, your mind, and, you know, just the whole boxing game overall. So you just joke about it, have a good time.
Did you feel anything like heading into this fight? Did you feel, you know, sometimes guys come back, everybody comes back different from a loss. And like we see Victor Ortiz after his stoppage loss, he's doesn't seem the same guy to me. He's kind of bouncing all around. He doesn't want to engage. Did you feel any of that at all when you were fighting?
No. I understand that that my offense, to me, is superb. You know, I think offense very well. The only thing that I think I lack is my defense. So, you know, going into the fight, I knew that I possess, you know, enough to get this guy out of here, if not get a win, you know. So my mind state was fine. I couldn't tell you how I would think or how my mind would be in the future. But, you know, like I said, I only could take small steps into becoming a complete fighter. Once that occurs, I'm for another world championships, and you know, with my defenses being superb, I think my mind state will be superb as well.
You know, Danny, what we're missing in the sport nowadays is young competitors after they have a mishap, a KO, you know, a hiccup in the process of them building themselves to be champions is they don't go after their conquerors. You know, Amir Khan didn't automatically go after Prescott. Are you hoping or are you gearing or are you leaving or are you just leaving it in the hands of your handlers of hopefully getting in with Pirog, or do you have any interest of getting in there with him again?
Oh, my interest is at an all-time high. You know, right now I understand that it's not possible. You know, it's something that I don't think I should do as of right now. Like, I don't want to lose and then get right back into it because, you know, it's a grudge. I understand that I have to pick some things upon myself and my skills before I can even go that route. But that's definitely something that I want to do because, you know, as a competitor and as a man from Brooklyn, and I have so much pride laying on the line that I just have to get that loss back. So, you know, that's just something that I always want to do. I understand that it's a sport and you can't take it serious because at the end of the day, it's just a sport. But, you know, to me, I have to get that back because I feel in my heart that I can beat that guy.
So, in fairness, you know, taking nothing away from yourself and what happened that night, was Pirog better than what you expected? Was he the better man, and he got you probably the best night possible?
Yeah, he really did give me the best. He really did. But I really think he has pretty good skills.
Uh-huh.
You know, I really think what he does it very well. He does the arsenal. You know, what he does it repeatedly, but he does it very well. I think a boxer can easily outclass him, and a southpaw would probably win on judges' cards. But to me, I think, you know, I still possess the skills offensively to beat him. I just have to get my defense up, and, you know, we can go ahead and get that rematch, hopefully.
Absolutely.
But looking ahead for you to 2011, I know Al always has a plan for you. Can you let us in on what your plans are? And really, you know, if you're going to make a Christmas wish list, you know, what's the ideal 2011 for you?
The ideal 2011 for me is just to get in there with anybody that makes sense, anybody that will push me to my limits and make me learn. Like, I was joking about it the other day on Twitter about me facing Mayorga because, you know, he's just like a wild firecracker. And you have to have anybody going in there some type of experience fighting that guy. So, you know, I'm just trying to get in there with somebody that'll make me learn and that's been through there and been through the ropes and just can pass that experience down to me.
Because you look at like a big criticism of you're now Heyman represented fighter, and so is Andre Berto. And a lot of people said when you were going to fight Pirog for a title that you hadn't quite been developed the way maybe you should have. And they say the same thing about Berto. Do you agree with that criticism now, or do you feel like you've been brought along just fine and now you need finishing touches in order to get to that next level?
Right. I feel like we've brought along pretty much perfect. You said it right. We just need to finish touches and get some things, you know, intact. And we can go ahead and go for that same thing. I wish we could have had it intact, and you know, that night of the fight, but it was just a lot of things going bad that night. That week, actually. So hopefully next time around, everything will be 100%.
Yeah, well, I wish you the best, man. You know, Happy New Year to you, and hopefully, you know, we get you a lot of times on TV and in good fights and meaningful fights, you know, because your division's heating up. And if there's a guy you can point to besides Pirog that you'd like to face or build towards, who would it be?
Who would it be at 160? You have Kelly Pavic, you have Sergio Martinez, Paul Williams, you know, he just took a loss for guys. So, you know, I'm definitely a competitor and I'm a fan of the sport. So I want to be in there with, someone that, style kind of complements mine. It'll be an exciting fight. So I want to be in there with somebody to be born and the crowd be born. I just want to give the fans a good fight and look back at the fight like, damn, I did pretty good.
Right.
but, you know, that was one of the things I think you said to me. It was an interview before our last one, and you had I asked you that. Like, would you rather be undefeated and all these titles, or would you rather be known for being in great fights? You said great fights, and it's nice to know that you still feel that way, you know, even after a loss. You know, that's what we need is dudes that are willing to risk, you know, and willing to just...
I'm not a punk. I get in there with anybody, you know, but you still have to be smart about it, and you have to understand capabilities and things that you lack, you know, so you can fix it and just be a competitive fighter. So hopefully 2009 will be a great year for me. And you prepare, I will get fighting. Because he hasn't fought yet, so.
yeah. Hopefully they build to that one. Because they're trying to put him in with Martinez or anything, so hopefully they build back to a rematch with you and be another really, really exciting fight. Because, you know,
I wish I got a best. He's an exciting fighter. I think he'll be some pretty good fighter and be a good fighter.
Yeah, I agree. Well, all right, man. I thank you for your time. And, Dave, I'm sorry, I'll pass it back to you.
No, you know, I just want to say Merry Christmas, Danny, and, you know, want to see you get back on track, you know, get yourself back in there and do some great things on 2011, brother.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You guys take care.
All right,
brother. Thanks for coming on, and, you know, happy holidays. Take care, man.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, it's always tough to come back from a KO, especially, you know, when it was seen all around the world. It was on HBO. Pierog, you definitely was consistent, you know, and he's absolutely right. He's a guy that does the same thing over and over and over. But there's been a lot of guys throughout history that do the same thing over and over and over, and they're successful. It's figuring them out. That's the hard part, you know, is we do, you know, you see, like Tito Trinidad is a prime example. I know we've been talking a lot about Tito Trinidad today and stuff like that. Was a guy that did the same thing over and over and over. But it was easy to figure him out, but it was a lot harder to capitalize what you wanted to do because the guy was so consistent and you couldn't discourage them and find the pockets to, you know, kind of impose your will on that person. And, you know, Danny Jacobs definitely having a death with his grandmother when stepping into the ring. Mind frame could have been a lot in the play to it, but the Victoria guy was, you know, Dmitry Pirog. And you want to see Danny Jacobs, the golden child, get back on his feet because that always leads to a great boxing story, you know, in boxing. We always root for the guy that makes a comeback, the Cinderella man. Ain't that right, Gabe?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like the best story in boxing is the guy that's not supposed to win, you know, and he pulls it out. Like, probably arguably my favorite knockout after Rahman Lewis 2 and now Martinez Williams 2 is Jorge Castro against John David Jackson. And it's, you know, Castro's the title holder, it's middleweight title fight, but he's just getting it handed to him by LDJ. And for 9 rounds, dude's cut on both eyes. You know, his mullet is flying everywhere. He just looks terrible. And he gets hurt. Castro goes against the ropes, and Jackson goes in for the close. Castro misses with the left, comes back with the right, and knocks him out. And mm-hmm. that is quintessential boxing. That is why I love the sport, because you just never know what's going to happen, and you got to let it play out. And you got to fight the fights, and you got to fight the tough fights in order for things to happen that are worthwhile and meaningful in the sport. So yeah, man, you know, and the underdog is—I don't know why, but you know, I think everybody just roots for the underdog. They just love it, you know. Unless you're, you know, a Floyd or a Manny Pacquiao fan, then you don't. But
you know what? Really quick, because in the chat room, people are asking. Well, RJJ1 is asking, why hasn't Pirog fought? I mean, you've spoken to their camp and their promotional group there, Gabe. Can you give us some insight and what's going on for hopefully a scheduled fights are happening for 2011 for Pirog?
Well, I think it speaks to the fact that he's got a belt now, but it's hard to make a fight at 160 because a lot of the 160-pound fighters or title holders that are worthwhile are European fighters. You know, you've got Sebastian Sylvester. Gennady Golovkin just picked up an interim WBA belt. Felix Sturm, I believe, has the same version of that belt. So, you know, it's hard to lure those guys over. And HBO, I know, is really high on the kid. They really like Pirog a lot. And what I'm told is they're looking to try to get him in on the first quarter of next year. It's just a matter of against who. That's the problem, because at 160, you've either got, and you really can't count Kelly Pavlik right now because he's in rehab. He's out for a while. We don't know if and when he's going to fight. But you
right.
look at the division, and you've got Sergio Martinez, which is a great fight, but neither guy brings a lot of money to the table, and it's like a meaningful fight for short money. And they're not really that sold on that. They may want to build towards that fight. And then where else do you go in the division? Paul Williams is probably going to move back down to 154 or 147. You've got Danny Jacobs, but he's got to kind of rebuild back up to that rematch. There's not a lot going on for 160-pounders on HBO or Showtime. You know, and Pirog only wants to fight in the U.S. I did a long interview with him. I don't know if that chat room person saw it, but it's on Max Boxing. You can find it. It's one of the few Dmitry Pirog interviews out right now. It tells his complete story of where he came from and everything. And he basically said, I asked him, what was it like to win the title and then head back home? And he said, it was great winning the title, but now I know I have another mission. I have a new goal, and that is to be in great fights. He wants to fight everybody. He understands that he's not going to make a lot of money. He's basically told Arlie Pirullo, Banner Promotions, who handles him, make the fights. I know I'm going to have to take short money. Just make the fights, and I'll win. I'll take care of the rest. That's his attitude. Now the problem that HBO has and Pirullo has is getting somebody to get in the ring with him that's worthwhile. So we'll see. You know, it's going to be tough. I'm not exactly sure why it's taken this long to get him back in the ring and on TV, but that's a big part of it. It's just, who does he face, you know?
Yeah. You know, and I do try to read the chat, you know, Aztec saying thank you for reading the chat room. I try as much as I can. I try to read what's being said on Facebook, Twitter. I try to do that. Sometimes my brain gets all scattered all the way around. So sometimes I'll say some stuff because or I lose track of what I was talking about because of the fact that I'm trying to keep up with what hardcore fight fans want to discuss on Leave It in the Ring. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We invite everybody, even the crybabies and stuff, or the people that get upset because you're talking to two Mexicanos, two Mexican Americans and stuff. But Gabe, should I finish off my top 15?
Yes, sir.
Let's finish it off. We finished it off before Danny Jacobs came on the line. If you're tuning in late, we are talking about my top 15, not mine, but the boxing fans. Top 15 things boxing heads would like to hear, see, or know you didn't in boxing. And we left off with Andre Berto being zapped with an electric shock every time he tweets, fight fans, who do you want to see fight next? And that was on number 8. Number 7, Floyd Mayweather's fights as entertaining as the Ustream cameos. Wow, that's, yeah. I don't know if you've seen his cameo when he's on Ustream. He's definitely entertaining, but his fights are not as entertaining as him getting on there, calling people names and going on his rants there, Gabe. So I see what the fight fans are talking about when they kind of threw this at us here. Number 6, I like this one here. Andre Durrell is mocked by Kermit Cintron in his acting abilities. Kermit Cintron says, he just fell to the canvas. I flew out the ring. I like that one. Number 5, okay, the last 5 for the 15 things boxing heads would like to hear, see, or know you did it in boxing. Going down to the last top 5 ones here, Gabe. All right, the number 5. Though some of us are not the fittest fellas in the world, we admit, when seen on a split screen on ESPN, Dan Raphael makes us feel better about ourselves. However, we hope Dan finds a diet so he's not the poster boy of obesity jokes. Ooh, yeah, you know.
Wow.
Got to get him on a diet there, guys. We got to find something there for him for the new year. You know, I don't know, maybe less food at the press rows, you know, in the media room. I don't know. Anyways, number 4. Number 4. Manny Pacquiao in the top rank office. Another title belt, Bob? Really? and people will buy into it. Yeah, yeah, I know. That's I'm pretty sure we're going to get a couple of Manny Pacquiao fans calling in right now about that one there, Gabe. And this was submitted by Gabe, just to let you guys know. So don't send me the bad emails and stuff. Number three, ESPN commentators and HBO Jim Lampley are forced to take a boxing history course, so they are more cautious of not making moronic statements. I completely agree with that one. I think they need to take a crash course of boxing history so they don't say something like, this guy's better than Roberto Duran, or this guy's better than Henry Armstrong. They need to kind of dig in a little bit into their boxing history. Number two, okay, we're down to the last two of our 15, okay? Number two, heavyweight title holder David Haye releases a statement saying, "Yes, I bitched out Vladimir, but I'm done being a bitch. How about a fight at cruiserweight for the heavyweight titles? What? Pacquiao fights at catchweights. Why not me?" Now,
wow.
Number one. Can we get a drum roll? The number one of the top 15 things boxing fans would like to hear state on. No, you didn't even talk. What is the Alex Ariza milkshake recipe? Is it A, orange juice and HGH, or B, water with a list of shot and beaten fighters Manny Pacquiao can face? Ah, that was I think that was sent in by the guys from StandAndFight.com. So don't blame me, blame them. Anyways, there you go, man. The 15 things that boxing heads wanted to see here. I know you did it in boxing, and I hope you guys enjoyed that one there. And as soon as Gabriel is ready for his Christmas list for boxing fans, we'll definitely speak on that. Hopefully, Gabe, you're almost ready for it. You know,
I'm almost there. I'm about 30 minutes away.
You're almost there.
We're building to it. We're building to it.
Building to it. No, and if boxing fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, add on to the 15 things or add on to the Christmas list, you definitely, you know, more than welcome to call in and chop it up here with us, 3 hours of boxing talk on Leaving the Ring, my boxing fans official radio show. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the Spanish radio show, Todo Boxeo, Siempre en Español, Siempre Boxeo, you got to go back and tune in. If you're Latino, you got to go back to those shows and tune in on Tuesday nights. It's going to go back on Monday nights in the new year, and it's a great show. You know, Sal Alamcito is doing a fantastic job with Ramon Arnada and Joe Sarate. Guys are just they're holding it up, man. They're holding it up for the Latinos when it comes to Leaving the Ring in Español. I don't know if you had a chance, Gabe, to tune into that, man, but I'm a fan of their program, you know, spinoff of Leaving in the Ring.
I don't speak Spanish, so you know, as upset as I am about the earlier comments made in the show, I understand Spanish better than I do, so I've tuned in to try to learn some boxing Spanish as opposed to the restaurant Spanish that I know. But you know, just the quality from what I've talked to is people that have listened to it. Sounds like they're doing a really good job. I'm really excited. I've actually talked to people in the industry, and they're pretty stoked about a Mexican show. You know, that's just geared towards Spanish-speaking folks. So I think it's been a really nice gift that this company has really given back to the fans. That we're really, you know, unlike promoters, we actually care about what the fans want.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we do. We do push to see what the fans want and stuff. You know, RJJ1, man. I like this one. You know, speaking about the top 15, that's top 16. I like to hear Floyd Sr. or Roger Mayweather speak coherent English. God, that was that's brutal, man.
Wow.
See, that's how you know I didn't write that list. You know, we have enough people for us in the chat rooms and the emails and the Twitter and everything else to write for us, Gabriel. So, you know, Manny Pacquiao fans, the ones, those three kind of shots at Manny. It wasn't me, okay? Yeah, it was the hardcore boxing fans and stuff. But we do represent the hardcore boxing fans, so it is me. It is us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I want to go talk a little bit about some future fights that are going to be happening. here. You know, Nonito Dornier getting in with Fernando Montiel. I'm really interested in what people are predicting or thinking about this fight. Call in at 347-215-7598. I'm not on the fence on this one at all. I you know what, Gabe, and I know some of my Latino brothers are going to get, they're going to cringe when I say this, but I can't picture Fernando winning this fight with Nonito. You know, seeing that, you know, Fernando had a tough time with Hasegawa when they stepped in, and, you know, Hasegawa, winning all four of the rounds, basically dominating those four rounds, and Fernando clipping them and getting them out of there. I just don't see Nonito kind of doing the same mistakes Hasegawa does. And Nonito's a little bit stronger. And when he gets comfortable, he gets really comfortable in there. You know, when you allow him to warm up and really catch his rhythm, the guy can start dancing in there, you know. And Fernando, to me, seeing his last fights, you know, he just kind of like lets you wonder, can he maintain the pace? Does he just strictly go off of athleticism? I don't know. Am I wrong about this one here?
No, I don't think you're wrong. Actually, I'm ready to go with my list too, just by the way. No, I don't think you're wrong at all. No, I think it's a pretty fair assessment. Oh, Dave, I hate to do this to you. I'm getting a call that I actually have to check out for a second, a boxing call. I'll be right back, sir.
Go right.
I hate to leave you stranded on an island. But,
hey, man,
right,
it's
back.
Okay. I've been stranded before, you know. I have been left once or twice in my lifetime among a lot of these other hardcore boxing fans and stuff. You know, I don't know about you guys and stuff, what you're getting in your present. I'd like to make a shout-out, though, to everybody that's really kind of devoted themselves to Leave the Ring. My compadre, my right-hand man, Red Jesse Garcia. He's a big part of where we're at right now in Leaving the Ring. I want to definitely give a shout-out to all the hardcore boxing fans, man, that follow us. You know, do send emails to us on leavingtheRing@gmail.com and visits the website and tunes in every Thursday night to chop it up and listen to two guys that just love boxing in a hole and stuff. You know, I mean, when I go to the gym to help out kids, you know, learn how to, you know, punch and do things correctly, I'm always promoting the sport. You know, a lot of these kids actually at gyms don't even know that I do a radio show or anything like that. I just try to more or less let them know about the sport to try to kind of, you know, pull them in. You know, like I said last time, a couple shows, episodes back, I said, you got to kind of be like a Jehovah's Witness. You know, they kind of knock on the doors and bother you and keep coming back and stuff. If you're a hardcore boxing fan, you got to kind of do the same thing and stuff. Just keep going back and stuff. And you're Jehovah's Witness here. Don't get offended, okay? Please, don't get offended. I got a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses in my family and stuff. I'm not Jehovah's Witness, though. I'm a Catholic. But, you know, taking a jab at you or anything like that. There's nothing problem. I don't got no problems with anybody's religion, okay? Please. So don't send me any emails about that and stuff, you know. I'm just making, I'm just making comparisons and what we should be like and whatnot. But going again, Gabe, Nonito Dornier, you know. Huh?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Going again with Nonito Dornier, you know, and you know, folks saying seeing that he's moved up in weight, is there speculations he's got Victor Conte? You know, is he probably doing something? I wouldn't fall into that and say he is at all. You know, because you know Andre Ward.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go for it.
I would just, you know, I think it's fair for people to think that. That's what I mean. You know, it's a fair assessment for people to go, you know, make that leap. You know, and say, well, the guy cheated before. You know, who's to say he beat the tests? You know, this and that. But you know, I had a chance to meet Victor Conte just recently after the fights at the Honda Center, Soto Antion. Hell of a guy, incredibly intelligent human being, and it struck me as a real forthright kind of guy. I mean, I know people were like, well, yeah, but he cheated. But you really look at his whole body of work, and it's a very short period of time. He said, we went down that slippery slope and decided, you know, we could make more money doing this, and it was wrong, and he did his time, and he's paid his price. Talking to him now, I just don't see that, one, that he would run that risk. He's got all eyes on him. He's probably looked at his company more than any other company that does what he does, you know, in the world. And all these different boxers from, you know, Andre Ward, Nonito Dornier, these guys checked him out and made sure that what he was doing was on the up and up.
that they weren't going to get involved in something that, that was illegal. That was, you know, first and foremost on their minds. And I know Andre is actually kind of taking a break from working with him at the moment. But Nonito, you know, he loves what's gone on with Victor, and really is very happy with the success that they've had together. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Look at his body in this last one. He didn't look super muscle-bound or all steroided out.
No, he didn't at all.
Like no, his body just looks like it's working like a machine, like, you know, a really well-tuned machine. And one of the other guys I got to sit with in having dinner with Victor was his partner, Remy, who has worked with him for years and basically handles the running. He's the, you know, kind of the simple way of describing what he does is he's the running coach, but he's so much more than that. And just listening to these guys talk about what they do and how they break it down, I couldn't even really regurgitate it. It was just so incredibly insane how scientific they are about their approach to building an athlete. You know, they really look at it as, you know, building one specific type. I mean, they're just kind of training your body to do correctly the things that you know, and maximize what you're trying to do. It's really just a very interesting process. I don't think Nonito is cheating. I don't think he's doing anything wrong. I think you look at his frame, the guy's got a lot of room to grow. He could move up one more time at least.
Yeah.
He's very big for that weight class. And I'm amazed that he stayed, you know, so far down for so long. You know, he's not exactly the youngest guy on the planet. So to me, no. I mean, people can flip out and make that blanket assessment. But when you take the time to educate yourself, talk to the man, read what he's actually doing. Steve Kim has been really great about, you know, he's been interviewing Victor and kind of covering his story, one of the few guys in boxing that has in a positive light. Check out those articles and then get back and make your leaps of judgment. But, you know, to me, I don't think he's doing anything illegal, not at all.
I don't think so either. You know, I mean, like I said, you know, you got to kind of look at, has he really changed since leaving the division he was campaigning in? No, he still looks the same guy. He just looks bigger, you know, and he has kind of found himself being more comfortable, where he was a much younger man, and he's still trying to find out whether he had championship caliber in him. Now you can kind of see that he's more comfortable, and he's more like, hey, you know what, I'm definitely champion caliber, you know. Gus Goons just tweeting me right now. Number 17, really quick, because I think these are hilarious, man. The fight fans are throwing at us. I like to see Bob Arum use Vaseline on us every once in a while.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, that is
grim.
Oh, man. You know, right now I'm getting tweeted, too, that's saying that you can't hear the show. Please, in the chat room, let me know. Can you hear the show so that we can refresh it or something here on Leaving in the Ring? If not, if you're having problems with the show, you got to refresh on the on your computer or your phone or whatever you're listening to us through. Sounds good to me, Ruff. That's what somebody's putting on there. So just refresh your page and she'll be able to get back in and hear us. Now, Gable, really quick, man, is your Christmas list, is it ready?
Yeah, it is ready, actually. I've
all
really
right, man.
On my list.
And you know what? Of a white Christmas. Go ahead, brother.
You know, I actually never had a white Christmas.
I've had a brown Christmas. You know?
Wow.
I've
had
brown Christmases and stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah, tons of, I'm actually going to have a brown Christmas. all right, so number one, this is actually number 10. We'll count back down to number one. Number one, everyone admits both the ring belt and pound for pound lists mean exactly the same thing. Nothing. You know, the ring belt is owned by a promoter. You guys have seen me do Twitter wars about it. Sorry, but when the scenario exists that, you know, you can have a guy that's promoted by the people that own the belt all happening in the same fight and they're fighting for that belt, immediately you can't be impartial. You can't be a stand outside the sport judge of what's right in the sport. Also, you know, they're making sanctioning fees by getting free advertising on HBO and Showtime every time the ring is mentioned, and they're not charging for it. So, again, they can't be impartial. Number two, HBO stops acting like Al Heyman has naked pictures of them. Pay everyone the same for tough fights, or, you know, don't overpay just Al Heyman's fighters. And you know, let's pay them large amounts of money for tough fights instead of showcases. Number three, HBO ends exclusive output deals to one promoter and forces the fighters and the promoters to offer competitive fights
We don't really want to see Berto against Freddie Hernandez. We don't want to see him against Mikey, you know, Rodriguez. We want to see him in with tough fights, you know, tough competitive matches that we all care about, instead of, you know, gimmies. When you get the casual guy, which a lot of times the HBO subscriber might be, thinking that this is what our sport is all about, that can't be good for growing this sport. Number four. The heavyweight crown gets unified after Hay and Vlad get it on, and then the winner, either one, takes on Vitaly. Yes, I have no problem seeing Vladimir versus Vitaly. I'm really tired of having a split belt. I think that's the best fight that can be made besides David Hay. Let's get all four guys. Let's get Tomasz Adamek in the mix and just settle it once and for all, and then come out of this thing with one unified heavyweight champion. I know that sounds cruel, but I'm a cruel person. So that's why it sounds that way. Floyd and Manny get it on is number five. I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm tired of it not happening. Let's just see the best boxer in the world against the best fighter in the world. Let's do it at 147, 50-50, or rather, let's do 60-40. Winner gets the bigger piece of the pie. How about that? Number six, that'll take us to the middle of the year. Number six, happening somewhere around the summertime or September 18th, a rematch that many people never got to see and never will get to see. Oscar and Tito discover the fountain of youth and the fountain of aggression for one night only. And they come back to rematch each other and do it in a 15-round fight so that we can actually get a clarity to a fight that was really terrible, but I'm going to spend the rest of my life arguing about who won. Number seven, heading back into reality, the World Series of Boxing takes hold and begins to showcase the amateurs and future Olympians in their league. I think this is a really great idea, this World Series of Boxing, and Leave It in the Ring is going to get really, and Max Boxing are going to get behind this idea. You know, the International Olympic Committee is really excited about this. USA Boxing is behind it as well. And it's an idea whose time has really come, I think. Back in the day, they didn't wear the headgear in the amateurs. We got to see who the fighters are. We got to see them in prime time, get to know their stories. And I think this whole team and league idea is really, really great. And we're going to start having guys on, you know, just about every week on this show. I'm coming out with a big piece on Tuesday detailing how it all works and where it's going. And I'll be doing a piece a week on the World Series of Boxing. So look for that. And in 2011, I really hope that people really start to get behind it, because everybody kind of asks, huh? And then when they get a chance to see it, they go, oh, these are really good fights. I can't argue with something that gives a whole team of ring card girls to each team. I think that is one of the most innovative ideas possible. Number eight, boxing takes note and begins to streamline the sport. They take note of the World Series of Boxing and begins to streamline the sport, not to just one belt, because I don't think that's really the problem, but into a cooperative with a collective bargaining agreement that gives the fans the fights that they want. The biggest problem in boxing right now, besides, you know, big name guys not taking challenges, is the promoters not working together and not sharing the revenue. You know, you got one guy saying, well, my guy makes more money, your guy doesn't make any money, I don't need to make a fight with you. If there was some sort of collective agreement, then maybe everybody could share the wealth, and then we could make all, you know, the fights that everybody wanted to see. So you may call me a dreamer, but, you know, I'm not the only one. Number nine, promoters, remember what pay-per-views are for. They're for super fights, not super tune-ups, not super mismatches, not so Manny can, you know, get a retirement fund against old people. They're for super fights, fights like Trinidad De La Hoya, the Bo and Holyfield, Tyson against Holyfield. Those are pay-per-view super fights. The things we have now, like Cotto Mayorga and Manny versus Mosley, those don't benefit us. They benefit, you know, the name fighter and the promoter. Enough of those. Let's get rid of them. And finally, number 10, or really number one, the winner of Manny versus Floyd Mayweather, which is in parentheses Floyd Mayweather, we'll take on Sergio Martinez to cap off a great year for boxing. We do this in December. We can do it anywhere you want. But I think Floyd fighting for the middleweight title, the real middleweight title, not a paper belt, not a catchweight belt, but the middleweight title, best fighter in the world or boxer in the world against the best middleweight in the world, I think it's a hell of a fight. I think it's a fight that all fight fans would want. And it would sure put a big smile on my face to end the year. So there you go. There's my Christmas wish list for 2011. Also known as things that could really help the sport.
And you know, going back and speaking about World Series of Boxing. If you haven't had a chance to even check that out, it's on Versus. It is, it's a great, great way of really getting these amateur fighters out there so the fight fans can really relate to them and recognize these names when they do turn pro. If you have a chance, go to Leaving the Ring, go to our YouTube channel, and you can see interviews that we've done with numerous L.A. Matadors at the moment. And we've backed them up from the beginning when it did was announced and they did debut. We were there to help out and to really cover it. You know, it's something that's been needed for a while. And the concept of it, it's great, man. I like the way they formatted it. It's almost like a franchise. They do the drafting like the way the NFL and the NBA do. In reality, they can't really get a lot of fighters from their hometown because of the fact that they're so less producing of fighters in hometowns because of gyms falling apart, you know, gyms being conquered by MMA gyms now, you know. But this is a great way of getting gyms to spark up that juice up again and saying, like, hey, there's something here. More kids are now being they're able to kind of find a hero, a hometown hero, and decide to walk into a gym and say, hey, I want to learn boxing. You know what I mean, Gabe? That's why I like this program a whole lot, you know?
Yeah, I really, you know, because the fights are quality, man. All these guys are Olympic hopefuls or really, you know, guys that are headed towards the Olympics. And you really look at, like, I was looking at the bout sheet, which was really nice, man. It was, like, on shiny black paper with red ink. It matched the colors of the team. There's a lot of little things that they, nice touches that these guys do in their presentation. But you look at the records of these guys, and they've got 200 amateur fights, you know, amateur titles. They're the cream of the crop. And now they're taking off the headgear and essentially fighting as pros. They're fighting under the pro judging or system. You know, body punches count. I mean, these are some of the first no headgear fights that they're having. And they're really, I found them to be really competitive fights. I went to that first night as well, and it was a really good night at the fights. It wasn't very long. They had a ton of fights, but they really knocked them out fast. And there's a sense that when you come away from it, you know, in professional boxing, it's like you'll see a card, and there's a multitude of storylines. Well, this guy's managed by that guy, so he may go on to fight this guy.
Right.
Well, this guy is at this level, and so on and so forth. With this, it's like, okay, well, tonight L.A. Matadors shut out, you know, the Miami Gallos, and there you go. You know, like, okay, now they've moved up in the rankings. They're now, you know, let's say 3-0 or whatever the record is. But you're looking at them as a team, and you're getting to know them as individuals. Like on any team, you find who your favorites are. And really coming into that fight, everybody was talking about Rashe Warren, who is a good fighter, but the guy that really stole the night was Javier Torres, a you know, big Mexican heavyweight, who kind of looks like a giant Fernando Vargas, which is kind of cool. Like if Fernando was a heavyweight, he'd kind of look like him. And that guy ended up coming out of it kind of a star and getting a little bit of run out of it. And that's what this whole thing is about, is letting them fight the fights and their personalities and everything else comes out and their skills. And then you can get behind them and you can track them all the way to the Olympics. And then when they get to be pros, you know who they are. I mean, a lot of times I don't follow college sports, but most of my friends do that watch, you know, other sports. And they'll be like, you know, oh, this is, you know, so such and such point guard. He went to this college. And there's a connection to them. Or he went to my college. There's even a deeper connection. And with this, if you kind of pick up a team in your city, you can kind of start following these guys in the pros much the same way and kind of have that same way of associating them. Oh, he was on the LA Matadors. He came out of this city. You know,
yeah.
He fought for America on this team. This is why I like this guy. I've been following him for years. Now you know something, and you can explain it to people. You know, and casual fans can kind of jump on board and watch on Versus and join in this process. I don't think it's going to be immediate, but, you know, if it keeps going, it's going to build, and it's going to be great for our sport, man. I really think people need to not look at it and say, ah, it's some off-brand, some, you know, XFL kind of shit. No, it's not. It's not. It's sponsored by the Olympic Committee. These guys all want this to happen. It's a great idea, and I'm really excited about it.
It's a great idea to keep amateur guys from turning pros right away and to really get back the Olympics where it's prime time television in the homes of every person in America and all worldwide in their living rooms, you know, and that's how people identify with these fighters. That's how you get people from overseas to identify with a fighter that's an American, or Americans to identify with fighters from the UK or from Mexico or from Puerto Rico or from wherever they come from, you know. I love the whole thing, you know, and the thing, the four teams that are out of United States is Mexico, the Guerreros, the Warriors, and then you got L.A., Matadors, you got the Memphis Force, and then you got the Miami Gallos, you know, and Memphis Force were having a great streak, and this is a team effort. This is what I like about it, too. It's really honestly on a team point system for the guys all have to have a certain amount of points to you know what I mean, to even capture who won that night. And I like the fact that Memphis was the favorite, you know, at the time. And the LA Matadors, I believe they lost their first, I think they lost their debut. I'm not really sure. Can't really remember. But I know they're now, 5-1, you know, in this tournament, which is great. And they beat Memphis. You know, they had a shot at them, and not a lot of folks were thinking they were going to take this. Memphis favorite. And they lost to, they end up beating Memphis. And the heavyweights, too. The heavyweight fights have been entertaining, Gabriel. I don't know if you had a chance to sit down and watch the heavyweight fights. Miami and Memphis going at it, and even Miami and LA Matadors to Memphis versus the Matadors. It's been great heavyweight fights there. You know, we're seeing something again. They're not the most polished yet, but they're amateurs, you know what I mean, where you could see potential. There's a – I can't remember exactly the name of the kid from the Miami Gallos. This kid is huge, and he's from Australia, you know, and this guy just – he just got massive power, big heavyweight kid, and if he could just tune it up a little bit and refine himself, you're going to have something. Same thing with the LA Matador heavyweight. You know, you're going to find something there. It's a great program. If you're a hardcore boxing fan and you want to see the state of boxing stay exactly, you know, where it's at, then don't tune in. But if you're a hardcore boxing fan and you want to see the state of boxing uprise and get back to what it once was, the glory days, then you support this. This is something you have to support. This is something you have to support and get in tune with. It's a great program, and you'll find it on Leaving the Ring on our website. We're going to definitely put more fighters and the director programmers on our show so they can kind of tell us a little bit more, keep us updated, and in Max Boxing as well. You know, you can find some article that's going to be written by Gabriel Montoya. I'm really happy they even asked us to help out or to kind of do interviews for them and stuff. I'm really happy for it because of the fact that I'm really into what they're trying to produce out there for us, hardcore boxing fans.
And if it's in, you know, near you, you can go check it out too. I mean, it's they did one at the Nokia Theater, and then the next week they did it at Club Nokia. And what I really liked was the presentation. You know, it was a little rough the first time. Show I saw. It wasn't, but it was little things. You know, it was like getting the guys. They would enter from the audience. It was actually kind of funny. They entered from the audience. They came down the aisle. It was like Spinal Tap. You know, they couldn't find the stage. You know, they had to go back around behind the curtain. And they'd kind of disappear for a while, and it took a few fighters to come in, and then they kind of had a path set up, and then they'd get them into the ring. But just the overall presentation, the two huge video screens that everybody could watch, the action, you know, close seats up on the stage for ringside, it was just really well put together. And then the fights themselves were all competitive. Yeah, and that heavyweight fight was one of the better heavyweight fights I'd seen in a while, period, much less professional or amateur. It was just a good fight, you know. I'd seen Torres fight as the wild card and trained there for a day. I happened to be in there when he was sparring. And guy's a good fighter, man. And he could be something. He's not the biggest heavyweight in the world. He's pretty tall, but physically I think he has room to grow. But that guy could be a future star, you know. Good-looking guy, well-spoken. And the bottom line is you can fight, you know. And so, yeah, I really think, you know, coming into this next year, it's going to be exciting to kind of be a part of this process. Hopefully it'll become part of the vocabulary of everybody and part of, you know, the regular viewing.
Absolutely. You know, and all fight fans are saying, where can you find this? It's on Versus Network. Check your local listings. We'll definitely try to find out exactly. I think it comes out tonight. You know, I know here in the West Coast it comes out about, I think it's like 9 o'clock at night. You know, so if you're in the West Coast, you should be able to. Well, Northern California, it's 9 o'clock at night for us over here. I don't know what it is over there in the southern part of California or anywhere else. So just check your listing of Versus. If you have Comcast, DirecTV, check out Versus and stuff and see where exactly the time and the date it's going to air for you guys. I think right now, though, they're at a halt. They're waiting for the new year. I think they showed their last fight their last competition last week. I'm not sure if it's going to be on tonight. I didn't see it on the listing because I do go and I set a reminder of all the fights that are happening and stuff, so I don't miss it. You know, I have a chance to go sit down, crack open a set of SI and just relax and zone out and tell everybody to shut up when boxing's on. You know, I'm a grump, man. You know, my kids call me, you know, Mr. Grumpy when boxing comes on and stuff, because I don't want to hear anybody talk. You know, I don't hear the old lady, and I want to hear the kids. I don't want to hear the phone. I even disconnect the phone. You know what I mean? And you know what's funny, Gabe? I still got a phone home line. Isn't
that
weird?
I don't even know what that is. I don't even know what that is. What are you talking about? What is the phone line you speak of?
Exactly, you know, and I disconnected so I don't hear nothing. And you know, sometimes when people say, hey, I want to come over and I'm going to bring a particular person, I always tell them, well, don't bring a casual fan, because during the fight, I don't want to hear them ask me a particular question, because I hate that. You know, it's like, you know, a boxing fan knows we have certain rules. Rule number one, don't talk during the fights. Rule number two, if you're going to ask a question, wait for the in between the rounds. And rule number three, and I think this is the biggest rule out of all, for all hardcore boxing fans and stuff, is don't talk MMA during a boxing match. Rule number four, bring your own beer, dude. What do I look like, a bartender? Bring your own beer when you come to a hardcore boxing fan myself, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Just bring me beer. That's my
yeah. Bring me beer. I'm the host. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Don't ask stupid questions and stuff. You know, definitely don't ask stupid. That's irritating. You know, and here I couldn't even. I think there's so many. You know, stupid.
I don't know.
Questions.
I took a lot of shots for the team early on. I mean, back in my old house in Sacramento, I was the fight guy, and we'd have huge fight parties, and I like to think that I came away making a lot of people boxing fans, you know, just because of what a fanatic I am in getting people to come over and watch. It was like, if you had a party at the house, because we had a big house and we threw big parties, then you had to come for the fight. You had to come and cheer it on, because to me there's nothing like a big fight party, you know, a bunch of people in one room.
Oh, all, yeah.
You know, even people that don't know what the hell is going on, like I'm actually watching Trinidad Vargas is on the TV right now, and I remember I had, you know, a bunch of people there for that, or actually it was at a big fight party for that, and there was people that didn't know who either guy was, and they flipped a coin and, like, picked a guy, and, you know, they're sitting there just cheering it on the whole time, you know, the guy that they picked. That's fine with me, you know, but...
I haven't been to a fight party in a long time and stuff, you know, because a lot of times, man, I want to be a hermit, and I want to be able to watch the fights and not be interrupted. You know, and kind of like what Asik put in the chat room, don't ask stupid questions. It just reminded me one time, and my uncle's probably going to strangle me when he sees me at the Christmas dinner and stuff. But big fight party, and when Roy Jones decided to move up to heavyweight, and if you've been a long-time listener, you've heard me tell this story before. He's going to fight John the Quiet Man Ruiz, and my uncle keeps, you know, saying, I'm rooting for the Mexican guy. I'm rooting for the Mexican guy. I think after the 80th time for him saying that over and over and over, I just got tired of it. I said, dude, he's not even Mexican, bro. He's Puerto Rican. You know what I'm saying? At least if you're going to claim you're a fight fan, at least know that much, you know?
Seriously. That's hilarious.
You know, but I don't know, Gabe. You know what? I think I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. And again, I want to send a shout-out to everybody that's been a huge part of Leaving the Ring, from Stand and Fight, from my co-host right here, Gabriel Montoya, from all the other guys that contributed. Alex was one of our other publicists, from Joe Cerate, who's helped out the show. If I missed your name, Merry Christmas. And please don't drink and drive, and be safe. Spend a lot of time with your family, hardcore boxing fans. It's just mad, mad love here for you guys on Leaving the Ring. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. We will be on for our last show of the year, Thursday night, 5 o'clock, same time, same place, same Batcave. And we'll be giving out the year awards, you know, best knockout of the year, upset of the year, comeback of the year, fight of the year, fighter of the year, among other ones and stuff. If you want to contribute in that, please send an email at leavingtheRing@gmail.com, and we'll read off what your vote is and stuff here on Leaving the Ring. Other than that, Gabe, you got anything else to add, brother, before we sign off?
Just a few fights that are happening this weekend in Japan, actually. If you
That's
can find
right.
a feed for these, you got Hugo Cazares, 33-6-2, versus Hiroyuki Sitataka, 19-8-1. At the Prefectural Gymnasium in Osaka, Japan. That's actually happening tonight. And then on December 26th, on Sunday, there are fights over the weekend, but none of them will be televised, I don't believe, happening in Belgium and Mexico. But at the Super Arena in Saitama, Japan, December 26th, Sunday, you have Daiki Kameda, 18-2, versus Silvio Oltiano, 11-3. These are flyweights in action. And then you also have, they're also fighting for the WBA flyweight belt. And then you have Koki Kameda, 23-1, versus Alexander Munoz, 35-3. And that, those are also flyweights in action. So if you can find those fights on a feed, the Kamedas are an exciting couple of brothers, definitely guys you want to check out. And so, you know, track it down and watch it. Other than
and
that,
Hugo,
a great.
Yeah.
Hugo Cazares, yeah. No,
he's a big puncher.
Guy as well.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
You know.
That could be an exciting fight. But, Dave, you know, coming into Christmas anyways, you know, it's just been a real pleasure, you know, doing the show and just really odd change in my life to add a radio show to my rotation of the different venues that I work in. And just want to say it's been really great, you know, growing into the show and getting to meet all the people that listen to the show and follow your work, and now they're starting to follow mine. It's just been awesome, man. So I want to just wish you a Merry Christmas, and to all the listeners, all the fight fans and fight people that have been on the show, from the boxers, the promoters, and everybody else, just a Merry Christmas or whatever holiday it is that you celebrate, and just enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoy the weekend and stuff, and we'll definitely get back together next week on Thursday. And if, like I said, if you're Latino, please support Todo Boxeo, Leaving the Ring in Español, on Tuesday night at 5 o'clock. And if it's near the East Coast, it's 8 o'clock. And it's always fun. Like I said, man, I always have a great time coming on here. Even when you have the morons that want to call in and just, you know, spit stupidness and stuff, it's not a big problem. If you like the 15 list, and you want to contribute on a new one, I like the stupidest things people say that are non-fight fans during a fight. Hey, send me your guys' a couple of your quotes and what you think. I see a few of them in there. You know, hate when somebody asks who's winning during the middle of the fight. I hate how much does this guy make for saying let's get ready to rumble. Hey. Send them all down to leavingtheRing@gmail.com, and we'll make up another list, and then we'll air it all over the air on Leaving the Ring. Again, Merry Christmas, and not Happy New Year's yet. Just Merry Christmas, brothers. There we go.
We'll catch you later.
And here's a little Christmas song, too, to get you in the spirit.
I dream of a
white Leaving the Ring, baby.
Christmas.
Or Latino Christmas.
Just like the ones I used to know.
In the hood.
Where the treetops listen and children listen.
Merry Christmas, man. Have a good one, guys.
Yeah, you too, man.